Welcome to The Positivity Effect, where paying it forward and doing something positive in someone's life can provide them with the confidence and motivation to do the same for someone else. Like a stone dropped into a lake, let's create a ripple effect of positivity throughout our world. And it begins with your host, Dr. Thomas Retscher.
Hey guys, what's up? Welcome back. Dr. Tom here in the house. It's Sunday and you're listening to The Positivity Effect. This is Fireside Chat number 14. Thank you so much for listening to the show and helping me create a ripple effect of positivity throughout our world. It's really been just amazing to hear the response that you guys have been giving me about how the show has been impacting your life and how you've been sharing it with your friends and your family and how it's been impacting their lives as well. So thank you so much. And it's just an honor to go on this journey with you together. Last Sunday, I had on Jason Benavidez of Octane Athletic Performance, and he shared how he helps others reach their fitness goals through mindset training. Today, we're going to keep that theme going. And I have on another awesome guy. Today, I have on a talented personal fitness trainer, Josh Trent, the founder of WellnessForce.com. And WellnessForce is a place where he provides online tips and coaching on how we can empower our fitness, our nutrition, and ultimately our lives through technology. On the show, we go deep on, you know, some of Josh's self-limiting beliefs that he had growing up and how it was a struggle for him in the beginning to become healthy and fit. We talk a lot about fear and how you could battle those fears, and we get into how Josh really got into the digital health technology niche and how he implements it with his personal training clients. Really great episode to help all of us up our fitness game. You guys are going to love the episode. And I really enjoyed hearing Josh's story of how he transformed his mindset and body. You can reach Josh at josh@wellnessforce.com. So without further ado, here is Josh Trent. Josh Trent, what's going on, buddy?
Thanks for having me on. So excited.
Yeah, absolutely. So we were talking before about Hawaii. Is that where you live right now?
I'm actually in North County, San Diego, here in Encinitas.
San Diego. And so just visiting Hawaii, or that was a part of your history?
That was part of the history. I went to Hawaii through part of my journey in finding what it was to be a professional trainer. That was actually back in 2003, 2004.
Okay. So, you know, we're talking about positivity and we're talking about your personal training. You know, how did you get started? Especially we're going to talk about the digital devices that you're using and everything, but where did you get started with the personal training?
Personal training started for me, it was actually by accident. I went through a bit of a struggle when I was a kid with not having the knowledge and tools about nutrition, about physical training. And I really wound up when I was 18, 19 years old, being almost 280 pounds. So I didn't have what I needed to succeed, and I knew it innately. So I saved up $10,000, quit my job. I was an automotive technician for Mercedes-Benz at the time. And I wound up moving to Hawaii for 6 months. And while I was there, I was working out at a gym. And I had always been involved in athletics when I was a youth. And a manager came up to me at the gym and he said, "Hey, I've seen you train. I've seen you work out. You should think about being a trainer." And my response was, "What's a trainer?" And then I realized, wow, you can help other people, empower them with tools to get their body in good shape, get their mind right. And that's exactly the path that I was on. So, you know, what I was most needing to learn, I became the teacher of it.
Now, you know, taking you back to that moment, you said that you had almost reached, you know, you had all this weight gain and everything. You know, what was going on at that time where you've kind of, something just kind of snapped and you're like, all right, I have to make a change?
Yeah, to really answer that question fully, we have to go back to when I was a kid. I was raised on Section 8 housing and I was fed by the welfare program. So for your audience, the welfare program in the 80s and 90s was government cheese and boxes of Wheaties cereal, no fresh fruits and vegetables, things like that. So at an early age, I had a lot of values and a lot of beliefs that were imprinted on my brain. Number one, because of my mom's illness, she was manic bipolar. I learned at an early age that you can't trust people, so people can't be trusted. Second thing was my dad wasn't around. He was working. And so I associated money and people that work to make money as money being evil. And because of my mom's illness and just where I was growing up, the location, bad things seemed to happen a lot. And so I learned at an early age that, hey, you know what? I'm going to have to do this life on my own. My dad's not around. My mom can't be trusted. Money is evil. So I took those beliefs with me. Now, you right. can imagine that that would cause somebody a lot of stress. So when I was a kid and I would be stressed out, I would use food as a way to medicate. And if I was stressed, I would eat food. If I was angry, I would eat. If I was sad, I would eat a carne asada burrito. And these beliefs wound me up leading to that 280-pound mark. That was really the frustration point that hit me when I was 21 years old, 22 years old. I was at a party drinking. And I had this moment where I just put down the cup and I knew there was something more. I was so frustrated and disgusted, really, with the way that I felt in my own body and the beliefs that I've been carrying around for so long that I put down the drink. I walked outside the party and I ran home drunk for like 3 miles. I got home wow. and I started researching, how am I going to change my body sustainably? The next year was really trial by fire, Tom. I lost and gained over 90 pounds. Then I became at the bottom of the barrel, really, where if anybody can relate, just feeling totally hopeless, like I can't change. I don't know how to change, but I knew that I wanted to. And so that's when I moved to Hawaii, and that's where the path really started.
You know, when somebody's like struggling with something and they finally realize, like kind of just how you said, how you had that moment at that party and you had to just run home and you're like, that is it. You know, when somebody's struggling, like you want to make the change and then you start making the change and then it gets really difficult, you know, very quickly. And you realize you're like, all right, this is going to be, I want to do this, but it's not going to be easy. Was it also for you a transformation in even the people you were surrounding yourself with, to help lift you to the next point?
You know, in the beginning, I really didn't even know the kind of people that I wanted to be around and have in my circle of influence. And so I just went towards the emotional driver for me was to feel better. And so I would look for people that had lives that I wanted. You know, I would be around fitness mentors, wellness mentors, people that were doing things in their life and their career and their profession that I deemed as being healthy and being fun and having that quality of life that I think we all want. So I started to surround myself with people that were professional trainers that had a balance of life and work and fitness and wellness. And I started to learn from them. And I didn't know it at that time, but the more I learned that I'd invest in coaches and invest in these people to learn from, that was what was really going to move the needle for me.
Who is somebody that, you know, in particular that really opened your eyes to like, this is something that I can do in my life, even though I have all these like scripts that were, in, you know, just bred into me growing up?
Well, the true answer, and I'd like to be as transparent as possible because your audience deserves that. And I'll tell you that even throughout my first 5 to 7 years of being a trainer, those beliefs were still there. And it wasn't until the beginning of this year, 2015, that I was able to attend 2 specific workshops, and they were around emotional intelligence and leadership. And it was mastery and transformational training. My course that really impacted my beliefs that I take into my digital health coaching practice now was by a gentleman named Michael Strasner. Michael Strasner is a world-class transformational trainer. He's taught over 100,000 people, 30 years of experience. He has become a mentor to me. I had him on the podcast where he displayed his new book. He's an Amazon bestseller. That's the kind of person, someone who's creating positive change in other people and at the same time is balancing his health, his relationships, and his career. I mean, these are the kind of people that I really like to learn from.
And, you know, I noticed too, just like from everything that you're doing, you know, like the people that you surround yourself with and also, you know, your clients, like people are really getting a lot of value from you. And one of the past guests I had on, his name was Angus Nelson. And he said something, he said, the beauty is in the brokenness. And, you know, I think that's so true in terms of even just your own story. Like you said, you're being very transparent, even up to 2015, you were still struggling with these thoughts. And it's like, you know, how much for you, how does that really translate through when you're working with a client, how they really are able to connect with you because you have that story? You know, you're not just like this person that's up on a pedestal, you know, where you have this perfect health, this perfect image, you know, smiling down and like, all right, let me come along, guys. Like, you have the similar stories with the people you're working with, right?
Yeah, people don't relate to perfection because we know that progress is something that involves failure and acceptance of failure as just part of the process. So for me, my core issue in life has been trust. I mean, you can imagine having a mom who was bipolar and having a loss of a male role model in my life. It made me have this kind of, I want to say, motivation towards finding the right answers. There's almost a sense of scarcity that I had for so long. And it was something that I didn't know until I started working with people again. They have the same feeling. Everybody wants the tools and the knowledge that will actually move them in the direction of their dreams, that will move them towards better wellness. And the more that we can talk about the things that are bothering us, the things that we're hiding, the things that we're scared of, that's how those things actually get light shined on them and eventually get solved. It's not some linear process. You're going to fail, you're going to get bloodied and bruised along the way. But how I work with clients now is just by being as vulnerable, as open as I can be about my failures, about my successes. Because at the end of the day, what people trust is the truth. And I do my ultimate best to let them trust me because I'm being as truthful as humanly possible.
And, you know, I think that really rings true for you because, you know, I was reading one of your reviews. Somebody said, I've worked with Josh in the fitness world. And in the video production department, and he's honestly one of the most genuine people I've come across. He is incredibly talented and brings fun to his projects while being extremely diligent. I like working with Josh. I like Josh, and I think anyone that has the opportunity to hire him, work with him, is going to be extremely satisfied. You know, can't be any more transparent than that, man.
Oh, that's a cool review. Thank you for reading that.
Absolutely. You know, and it's, you know, just thinking about the people you work with, like, Is it a common thing that people feel that they have to be perfect?
I think so. I think perfection is glamorized in America, maybe even globally, but especially in our society where vulnerability is considered a huge weakness. I mean, you and I both know when we were kids growing up on the football team or whatever we were doing, men don't cry. Men don't show emotion. Men don't talk about their problems. But unfortunately, what that leads to is a lot of repressed energy. And any energy that we don't deal with, it comes out either sideways or diagonally or in unhealthy ways. So yeah, absolutely. I mean, without talking about the truth and without really having the uncomfortable conversations that most people aren't willing to have, progress doesn't happen.
Absolutely. You know, and Josh, like you work with a lot of people one-on-one, you know, not obviously just giving a personal story of, you know, on the air, but like just those overarching themes, like what are some things that people are struggling with?
The clients that I work with are looking for increased accountability. So one of the things that I see time and time again is a belief system of just because this is something new or this is something exciting, it might not work out. You know, there's always this voice in the back of people's heads, whether it's a business goal, a health goal, whatever it might be, where this voice, I guess you could equate it to the good wolf and the bad wolf. The good wolf is always going to be there. And I think when I coach people, we have to have a lot of conversations around quieting the bad wolf, because the thoughts that we have literally, and I mean actually tangibly, dictate our actions, our beliefs and our thoughts. So the number one thing that I do with clients is have those open and honest conversations in the intake forms, in the orientation, to laser focus on the beliefs that aren't serving them. Because if we can uncover these beliefs and we can start creating this new story for clients, that's when the physical change happens.
And, you know, you're also doing like some really big things with technology. You know, I want to tie that in now because it's not just this one-on-one coaching that you do. How did you get started with really building this thought process of implementing technology into, you know, a plan of wellness?
Yeah, in 2014, I saw a film and it was by two Olympic athletes, Sky and Tamara Christofferson. And they're on the show. It's episode 6. And what we talked about was their film. Their film was Personal Gold. It was a documentary film about the 2012 women's cycling team, USA women's cycling team, where they used digital health technology and quantified self applications to essentially hack and and create progress like they had never seen before in their training to win a silver medal in the Olympic Games. And I was driving home one night, a week after we saw the movie, kind of like one of those seeds that gets planted, but it doesn't grow until it's ready to grow.
Right.
Well, the seed had been planted in my brain around, if this technology can help Olympic athletes win a gold medal, win a silver medal in the Olympic Games, what can quantified self and digital health technology do for regular people? And I had this ultimate lightning bolt moment where I thought, this technology has the power to change lives outside of the Olympic stadium, but in the everyday interactions of being a mom, being a dad, being a busy working professional, the accountability and the ways that these devices can create mindfulness, real tangible mindfulness for people, I don't think we've ever seen before in fitness and health. It was one of the things that frustrated me so much about being a trainer in gyms is there was 150 hours a week where I didn't know what my clients were doing outside the gym. And so this technology gives a coach such a insight into how their clients are showing up day to day in their own lives. And that's a powerful tool.
Man, that is awesome. What are some of the products? Like, what are some of the things that people are using to really build this accountability into their life and also kind of just step up their game with their training sessions that they have with you?
The modality that I use is based on four pillars. So it's our movement, our exercise, our nutrition, our hydration, and our sleep. So if I know those four pillars and I know day to day, hour to hour, how people are showing up and what their data looks like, then I can give them the right touch points at the right time. Here's a good example. If Jane Smith every Tuesday night and every Friday night gets really bad sleep, and we see this on a high level after 30 days of measuring, well, then Jane and I can start to have these real conversations about what she's doing on those days that's impacting her sleep. Now, that's been anecdotal up to this point with coaches and trainers, because when a coach gets feedback from their client, they'll say, hey, how have you been sleeping? How have you been eating? And typically the client's so busy, they'll say, oh, I've been doing okay.
or they don't want to tell you either.
They don't want to tell me or whatever it is. But what's unique and powerful about digital health is now the data becomes the disciplinarian. Before, clients would come into the gym and they'd say, hey, I want you to kick my butt for, 2 hours a week. Well, that doesn't elicit positive health change over the long run. What does, though, is sustainable systems that are mindful and that are showing how someone's actually being, their day-to-day actions. That's what really moves the needle for people. And that's what digital health provides.
So if someone is, looking to work with you, are they only really able to be a client if they're willing to use these, basically use these devices to build the accountability?
Absolutely. I mean, and I'll just say there's a caveat here. Digital health coaching is not for everyone. Digital health coaching is for the client who's willing to look at how they're showing up. The typical paradigm in fitness that's broken is you eat more or you eat less and you move more. And we know that's fundamentally flawed.
Calories in, calories out, right?
Exactly. The calories in, calories out model, or even the, I think George Bush was one of the people, he was riding his bike one day and he said, I don't understand why people can't lose weight. They just need to exercise more. And we all know that that's an old way of thinking,
right,
because there's been so many studies about the energy potential of people. It's not about calories. It's about your stress, your sleep, your hydration, your digestion, your microbiome, your sympathetic versus parasympathetic state. There's so many different pieces that play into someone's wellness and to people losing weight that really, unless you track it, it's hard to manage. It's hard to change things unless there's numbers to support that change.
That's interesting. In my own industry, working with people that are hearing impaired and, with all these new hearing aids that are out, we're able to track now the situations that they're in. So we know, if they come back and they say, listen, I'm not hearing well, when I go to the restaurant, but then we look at their listening environment, they're like, it's quiet the whole time. They've never even stepped foot into a restaurant. Then we can counsel them and say, listen, I need you to go into more of these situations first before we really start tinkering with the actual sound.
So that's a good point. The context is just as important as the goal, right? The context of which you train or facilitate the growth.
Right, right. So Josh, on the positivity effect, everything that you're doing absolutely is those things, building, having better health, having a better body, that is really what helps us have more positive thinking in our life. But you know, talking about mindset too, is that something that you discuss with your clients to really see where is their head at, you know, in terms of their overall mindset?
Yeah, this is an awesome point, because whether it's a physical goal or something, they want to lose weight for a wedding, the mindset is the most important part. So what I take people through in orientation is four different forms, their intake forms. One of them is a readiness questionnaire for their athletic ability, their medical history. But the other one is a form that I call the why form. And on that why form, we really dive into why is this goal so important? On the next form we have is a SMART goal form, where I take them through something that's very specific, it's measurable, it's attainable, it's realistic, and obviously it's time sensitive. But the last form that I dive into is their health habits. This is the most powerful form, because on the health habits form, we identify the mindsets and the beliefs that previously have held people back. And that's where the uncomfortable conversations really occur. The way that I produce results for people isn't through just giving them action. It's having an underlying meaning of why the actions are so important.
You know, that's interesting that you talk about this. You know, going just kind of jumping back to what we were talking about earlier when we first started with your story, was that something that you had to kind of work into your own life as you started to make this transformation into this world of health and fitness? You know, were you writing your goals down? Was it something that you just felt came to you? Or, you know, what was that process for you?
I have an application on my phone. It's called Day One. And Day One is a journal. So on that journal, I'm able to put my fears, my hopes, my dreams, my progress. I can snap photographs of things that I'm working on, my goals. Unless I record my emotions and my thoughts, it's hard for me to stem some kind of value from them. And one thing that I've learned from journaling is that when you put your thoughts on paper, it takes the power out of the negativity. It takes the energy out of the thoughts that don't serve me. And I've found that over the course of years. Typically, I'll journal once a day. Sometimes I'll miss, but the more consistent I am with my journaling practice, the more it takes the power out of the bad wolf voices, those negative voices that we talked about.
Yeah. And Josh, if you don't mind me asking, you know, what is something maybe you have written down in the past year that by putting that down, it basically took its power away and it was able to help you, you know, push past it?
That's a great question. I think the number one thing for me, there's been a fear around being successful. Like, do I have what it takes to be successful? And I think a lot of people have that, but they're not really feeling like it's a good thing to talk about it. But I think the opposite. I think the more I've been able to voice, you know, whatever my fears are around being successful or being able to take on clients or being able to build programs, just talking about my fear, talking about how I'm actually feeling has been what unlocks me making the steps forward to actually do it. There's a really great quote by Thoreau, and it's do the thing and you'll have the power. And
I love that.
That's been a take home for me, because it's not that we take perfect action. It's that we take action and then we achieve what we want. While we're taking action, the voices are still going to be there. The negativity is still going to be there, but it's just doing the thing. And that's what has given me the power.
I think so many of us, probably even myself included at times, it's like we feel that we have to be fearless, you know, and it's not, I don't think it's the word fearless. It's that we have the fears. That's what courage is that we're going to face the fears, even though we have them. You know, it's like you're not going to step out of your house and be Superman. You know, it's like you just have to know that the fears are there, recognize them, and just face them head on.
Absolutely. Yeah. Life does not happen without the occurrence of fear. So, and fear safety, right? I mean, when we're on a cliff, fear is natural for us to not jump off the cliff. That's a healthy fear. So there's, you know, logical, rational fear. And then there's the negative kind of irrational fear. And there was a gentleman on the show, Peter Scott, he wrote The Fearless Mindset. We talked about this. It was, you know, there's things in life that serve us, these fears. That, you know, if we're about to get hit by a train, we get out of the way. But our body biochemically is wired for the same energetic response to fear. So whether you're in a fight with your spouse, or you're giving a big presentation at work, or you're being chased by a robber, it's the same response in our body. Elevated pulse, elevated respiration. It's up to us to find that edge and find that intuition around, is this fear healthy? Can I deal with this fear? Or is this fear something that I have to act on? It's the difference between reacting and responding to the fear.
Why do you think so many people can't step past it or even can't get started?
It's hardwired, Tom. There's so many stories that we've created in our lives from childhood that don't get dealt with because there's not the ability to voice how we're feeling, to express how we're feeling, and those stay in there. It's almost like I could equate it to at the bottom of the well, there's a lot of sediment. And what we get to do as adults and professionals is go into the well and clean it out. And I think that's what's holding people back is cleaning out the well, cleaning out the old stories that don't serve us anymore. There's a fear around that. It's scary. But that's the stuff that we get to do to really move forward. And I think that people are held back by fear. It's because there's a hesitance to clean out the well, but we get to clean out the well.
And, you know, we all want to be more positive in our life. We all want to, impact the world. Giving somebody an actionable tip, what would be that one thing that you would say to everybody listening that would just, if they are struggling to face those fears, to just get them kickstarted, to really start the process of attacking everything and really moving forward in their life?
Community. Community is the number one thing that will help us work through our fears. The way we're wired, we talked about, or I mentioned the biochemical response of fear and stress. Well, the same thing is with oxytocin. The same thing is with community and connection. The more that we can voice our concerns to a trusted community, it could be a mastermind group, it could be a men's group, it could be a community group. There's a lot of successful ways to join groups, small groups, large groups, where we can express how we're feeling and we can use the feedback from that group to realize, hey, maybe these voices aren't true. Maybe it is just false evidence appearing real.
Love it. Love it. Josh, I love talking about gratitude on the show, and I could tell just from, you know, your persona and everything I've read and listened to, you know, even listening to your show, that you really are a grateful guy, and, you know, it just comes through in your voice. So I'd love for you just for a moment just to talk about some things that you're grateful for, especially everything you've been doing, like maybe even a particular experience from somebody that you have mentored or, have gotten to help them in their journey of health. You know, I'd love for you to share that.
It has been the ultimate dream of mine to launch my podcast this year. And I had a lot of experience podcasting before where I was a guest host on a show, Underground Wellness. And I had worked at a radio station when I was a youth. So there had always been this dream and this fire for me to express myself with my voice. But I had a lot of those conversations around fear in my head that permitted me from doing so. And I just had this block that I got to work through. And I think my greatest gift is being able to express myself. I'm grateful to be able to have a podcast where I bring on people that I respect, people that are thought leaders. I'm grateful to be able to have a website where I can give tools and resources that actually help people, doing it for the right reason, serving people for the right reason. I'm grateful to be able to attend workshops where I get to better myself. I'm grateful to live in an environment here in San Diego where I can be outside and I can go to a healthy grocery store. And I'm just grateful for being able to make the choices in my life based on my environment. I'm very lucky to live where I live. There's a lot of people that live in food deserts. That's a challenge for them to eat healthy. And I'm just grateful for being able to design my life in the way that I think will facilitate my best health.
I love that. And do you think, Josh, like just working gratitude into your life has made it easier for you to make the right decisions, to know, you know, this is, you know, where I want to live, or this is what I want to do in my life, because you're just more cognizant of really, you know, you have a higher awareness level of what you really want to get out of life?
I think gratitude is a practice. So what you're touching on is the practice of gratitude. And let's be honest, sometimes it's really hard to be grateful because you're experiencing a downfall or a stress or whatever it is. But the catch-22 is that those times when we're most affected by our environment is times where we get to be the most grateful. And that's the key that unlocks more gratefulness. And I don't know if anyone can relate who's listening with the law of attraction. Maybe you've talked about that on the show before, but the law of attraction is in full effect. And whether you believe in God or the universe or whatever religious beliefs you have, there is something to be said about what we focus on happens more. And gratitude is a perfect vehicle for whatever we want to focus on. That will happen more. So gratitude has been a keystone for me and I'm not going to lie, there's been moments where I'm not grateful and I suffer because of that, right? But the times I am grateful are the times that I receive more energy and more things and opportunities that I get to be more grateful for.
You know, and for the listeners, if they're struggling with something right now and maybe they're still very deep in it, or they just got out of it. You know, for you too, like thinking back on your past and everything that you've been through, would you say, like talking about that quote I mentioned from Angus Nelson I was on, that, you know, the beauty is in the brokenness, is that knowing everything that you've been through, really those ups and downs has really made you who you are today. And that's kind of where a lot of that gratitude stems from. And people should recognize that, you know, it's not the end point wherever they're at, and that anything that they're struggling with, they can look at it in a different light. They can, like you said, get into community, and they can learn from the experience that they're going through.
Absolutely. You hit the nail right on the head, because it's a process. This is not, there is no finish line. There's a great quote actually from a book that's called Better Than Before. Are you familiar with Gretchen Rubin?
I am, yes.
So one of the things she talks about was that on this process of behavior change, on this process of being this authentic version of yourself, this best version of yourself, that there is no finish line. I think I've been caught up so many times in life where I'll tell myself, well, if I just have this many clients, or if I just have this much money in the bank, or if I just can get my body to look this certain way, then I can relax and everything will be great. But the reality is that it's not true. What makes everything great is a decision for everything to be great, an acceptance of the process. The process is the process is the process. And the more that we can design our life in the way that we feel is best serving us, then we have to enjoy that process. We get to enjoy the process of what that's like. Just because you're in a place now where you're not happy, or you don't want to be there, it is 100% in your capability to change your situation. And there's going to be immediately stories that come up in heads. When someone hears the sentence, you get to change where you are, there's a lot of negative self-talk that's going to come up. But that's when the community comes in. And then sooner or later, months go by, you start realizing that you haven't had those conversations for a while. And it's because you've been choosing to be vulnerable, to open yourself up in a community, and to be open to the process.
Oh, that's excellent. And I was going to say, I like what you just said at the end, being vulnerable. You know, what is the importance of that, of really being open and vulnerable with those in our lives?
I think that the vulnerability is the one thing that holds us back from our dreams. When we're not vulnerable, it's really hard for people to connect with us. Hopefully on the show today, people have been able to understand that vulnerability is a strength. It's a power. It's not a weakness, especially for the male listenership. Guys, we owe it to the women in our lives, to the people around us, to be as vulnerable as we possibly can, because that's when people trust us. That's when people connect with us. That's when you make more money. That's when you're more successful. And it's something that I think, I don't know how deep you want to get into this, but it's something that our society and America in general gets to change, is guys being more vulnerable, men being more vulnerable. That's the key that unlocks the next level.
Why do you think that, you know, there is like this fear for men to be, you know, to be vulnerable?
It's scary, man. You might get rejected. You might get hurt. You might be perceived as being weak. Men especially, right? We don't want to be perceived as being weak. We're providers. We fix things. We do powerful things. So we don't want people to perceive us as being weak. But the caveat in that is that when you share your struggles, then people can connect with you more and they're more willing to help you. And when you get people helping you, that's when you really start to get that snowball effect in your life, where people say, hey, you know what? Tom is a great guy. He always talks about his own struggles and he talks about solutions on how he's overcome them. That people can relate to you. There's a relation that happens when you're vulnerable that doesn't happen when you're closed up and when you're not talking about how you're actually feeling.
That's so true. You know, I was gonna say, it's funny. Like, what was I saying? Like right before we got on this call, right? Like this call was tough for me today, but I didn't want to like reschedule because, you know, like I'm struggling right now with this migraine, and I'm like, you know what? Like Josh carved time out of his day for me today. I'm like, I cannot not show up for this, you know?
But how is that a perfect reflection of your character and who you are? Like you might not want to do something, but you know, it's in the greater good of the people you're serving, the message you're putting out, and you did it anyways. I mean, that is powerful in its own right.
Yeah. And it feels good. And it's like, I'm actually feeling better already just chatting with you. And I really believe in that, you know, even though we can't see each other, there really is this connection that you can have through the, you know, through this audio medium, you know, and I feel better already just having this chat. You know, it's powerful.
So powerful. Yeah.
So Josh, we're coming up to the end. This is my big question I've been asking everybody at the end. If you were suddenly at the end of your life and you were reflecting on all that you've been through, all that you've created, what kind of impact would you want to be remembered for?
Awesome question. I think what I want to leave as a legacy or an impact is the memory of me being a trusted person to my wife, if I'm married at that time, to my community, the people that love me, the relationships that I have. I want to be someone that people have trusted and that people can count on for my words matching my actions and leaving some kind of impact that can be carried on by other people, whether it's through Wellness Force, whether it's through digital health, or whether it's through just a way of being. I want to be that person for my friends, my family, my community that they've always trusted and that inspires them to be the greatest version that they can be.
I love it. And, you know, it's like, I love that we have this medium, you know, this podcasting medium. I feel like we're all leaving like these time capsules, you know, for, you know, when we are no longer on this earth, like people are going to be able to go back and be like, Josh Trent is a stand-up guy, you know, or was a stand-up guy. And that's just awesome. So thank you for sharing that.
My pleasure, man. I like the analogy of the time capsule too. Who knows, right? 50 years from now, they're going to look back on these archives and say, wow, these guys were talking about real things.
Right. It's like, oh, like we, you know, food, it's going to be funny. Like 1,000 years from now, like, oh, you know, you just pop a pill into the microwave and like a turkey comes out. Like, you know, who knows how easy. I don't know if you ever seen, have you ever seen the movie Fifth Element?
I've heard of it. I know what you're talking about. It's kind of like the Jetsons, you know, or Star Trek.
It's like the Jet. Yeah. And there was like a scene where she like literally takes a pill, puts it in the microwave, and like a second later is like a full Thanksgiving dinner she pulls out. And I'm like, that's ridiculous. Like,
who knows, man? It could happen, right? I mean, if you look at some of the things that have been in movies 20 years ago, like people using a watch and talking to people on a watch and having video conferencing, all that stuff was considered to be futuristic. And now we use it as if it's commonplace.
Yeah, like Back to the Future, there was like the they were doing video chat, and now we're we're doing it on our iPhones. It's crazy.
And this is why technology is so exciting. And you talked about gratitude, Tom. I am so grateful to live in the time that we live where we have this technology that can be of service, because for so long, technology was just the cause of poor health and the cause of increased sedentaryism and automation. And now we're at this other side of the sword, this beautiful side of the sword, where now technology is giving back.
You know, I just had a thought. I don't want to kick this interview yet, because I think you just said something really powerful in terms of like technology and health connecting and everything that you are doing. And you know, you really have your thumbprint on that. So what is like something that you are like most excited about right now in the digital health field, or even something that's coming out? Like, what is something that really is like, this is insane, like I can't wait to share this with my clients?
Oh, there is. When we see in the digital health field non-invasive glucose monitoring, so the ability to track calories without logging them, you know, essentially something that can just track our blood and how the glucose in our blood changes based on what we eat. Once we know that exists, which, I mean, there's been tons of companies that are spending billions of dollars on non-invasive glucose monitoring. When that gets perfect and when that gets scalable, then we're going to know everything. We're going to know how our clients as coaches are really eating, how it's affecting their blood sugar in real time. That's powerful. I think we're still a ways out from that, but I'm really excited about where non-invasive glucose monitoring can go from not just a diabetic monitoring standpoint, but just a general health standpoint. We'll know how people are eating, and then we'll know how they're moving, how they're sleeping. When we start to know more, we start to know what we can get. We start to know how we can change for the best.
And that is like accountability on a whole another level. Like for someone that really just has a hard time, you know, working through food or, you know, getting themselves over to the gym, like that's like a game changer right there.
I think it's the ultimate, man. I mean, imagine if you knew how many calories you were eating within 3% accuracy.
Oh my gosh.
There'd be no more guessing about what makes you better and what doesn't, right? Yeah. And we talked about earlier, you know, it's not about calories in, calories out, but to a point, we have to look at how many calories are coming in so we can adjust a little bit.
Yeah, and they know, like, especially if they're working with a personal trainer or it's their doctor, they're like, "Oh no, he's going to know I had that slice of pizza."
Yeah.
So powerful. Awesome. I Josh, I definitely want to keep in touch. I can't wait to hear, you know, more about what's going on. And I love what you're doing, you know, on your podcast. It's definitely, you're at the forefront right now with health, and it's so important because health, when you have health, you know, you have everything else. Everything else comes from that. You know, that is the positivity effect, I think, is when you have good health, you're able to show up for everybody else in your life. So thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you for having me on and giving me the space to share. If anybody wants to connect with me, I'd be happy to answer your questions. And this was a real joy, man. So thanks for having me on the Positivity Effect.
Absolutely. Everything's going to be in the show notes, Josh. What's the best way, like right now today, for people to reach out to you?
It's Wellness Force. So Wellness Force is my brand all over the internet, Twitter, Facebook, Wellness Force. But if you want to reach me directly, just write me an email, josh@wellnessforce.com. Tell me that you heard me on the Positivity Effect, and we can talk about any questions you had.
Thank you, Josh. I love when someone gives their email out, because it's just, that is like, it's so personal. You know, it's today, you know, when we have all of our Twitters and our Facebooks and everything, an email is so powerful. So excellent. Awesome.
Thank you, Tom.
And, you know, Josh, thank you so much, man. You've been so generous with your time and your stories and everything. So be well, and we'll talk soon. Hey, thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Positivity Effect. I promise to keep sharing inspiring stories with the guests every single day. I hope you feel inspired, and I hope that we stirred some self-reflection in you on topics like transparency, compassion, and empathy. Please check out the website at positivityeffect.com, sign up for the newsletter, and I'll send you some tips to get you thinking more positively. If you're really enjoying the Positivity Effect, please tell someone about the show. Together, we can create a ripple effect of positivity throughout our world, something that we need so desperately today. So thanks again so much for listening. See you tomorrow for another episode of the Positivity Effect.